From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Progressive forces within the Democratic Party released a scathing indictment of their own party on Monday, calling out leaders for failing to understand last year's devastating election loss. On the website democraticautopsy.org, the critics write, quote, "The party's national leadership has shown scant interest in addressing many of the key factors that led to electoral disaster. Instead, the main emphasis has been on matters that the Democratic Party and its presidential nominee had little or no control over, an approach that largely obscures the party's role in its own defeat," end of quote. A recent internal shakeup within the Democratic National Committee that pushed out some progressive figures underscores the autopsy's criticisms. While this week's indictments of some of Donald Trump's colleagues is cause for celebration among Democrats, my guest contends that Robert Mueller's investigation will not save the Democratic Party come election time. My guest is Karen Bernal. She's the chair of the California Democratic Party's Progressive Caucus and one of the authors of Democratic Autopsy. Welcome to the program, Karen.
Thank you for having me, Sonali. Glad to be here.
So the word autopsy, of course, conjures up death, which I suppose last year's electoral defeat was a sort of death of the party. Shouldn't this have been something that the party itself should have done? Maybe it's done it, but it hasn't shared its findings with the public?
Well, from what I understand, this is pretty standard course for most elections. And an autopsy, that phraseology is used after most elections. Some call it a postmortem, and so on. From what I also understand, this past election was the first time that the party had not done an autopsy of sorts of the election. I understand that there were others, especially from the wealthy donor class, that did do something of the sort, but there was nothing from the party itself. And so we feel, however, that it was such a monumental election and loss that of any elections that deserved to inspection, that was the one. And so we stepped in and we decided to do one and to really analyze what had gone on, especially the things that we could control.
So one of the approaches of the party and its supporters last year was chastising its own base for, for being skeptical of or cynical about its party. We were constantly told that Donald Trump would be the result if Democrats didn't show up or if Americans in general didn't show up to vote for Hillary Clinton. So the party sort of used Trump as a bogeyman to whip its voters into shape, but people didn't respond enough, even though, of course, Clinton won the popular vote. She lost by slim margins in several states. Some might say that that was because of a voter disenfranchisement. However, those voting buffers, the margins by which or between the two candidates should have been a lot larger. What can you tell us about the turnout for the Democratic Party in last year's election?
Well, we know that the turnout across the board was significantly down. And this is really disturbing when you consider exactly what we were up against. We were up against Trump. But of all things, we know, for instance, from the analysis and the collecting of information that the African-American vote, for instance, went down by 7 points between 2012 and 2016. This did not bode well for the elections coming up. And also that the party itself put $0 in African American outreach for the 2016 election. This came out in a report very recently in The Nation by Steve Phillips that explains this. And those two things are very significant factors because, by and large, had we had the African-American vote as we did in previous presidential election cycles in all likelihood, we would have a President Clinton.
So one of the other things that the Democratic autopsy shows that you helped to conduct is that since the election, there's been a significant drop off among African-American women voters. Now, we know that Black women were the voted, I believe, in the highest percentage, something like 96 or 97% of Black women voters voted for Clinton last year. But since then, the support in that specific demographic block for the party has dropped by 13%.
Well, the thing about it is, I think it's very easy to see that with certain demographic groups, and I will say that, let's say that groups that have that suffer the brunt of a lot of our socioeconomic injustices, and not to mention racial gender injustices, have been, interestingly, the very demographic groups that have shown a significant downswing when it comes to everything from registration to turnout. Interestingly, at the same time, in the polls that have been conducted, the Harvard-Harris polls and so on, we can see that figures such as like Bernie Sanders, for instance, have enjoyed a great deal of approval from these very same groups. I think that we can perhaps point to as a reason a lack of enthusiasm. It's really hard for me to really come to any other conclusion. It is a very worrying trend, especially so when we see that the party has not dedicated any resources, boots on the ground, or money to these communities that we need to turn around.
Of course, the issue of voter disenfranchisement and the Republican Party's attempts to undermine votes of people of color is a significant issue. But it seems as though the Democratic Party was unable to attract enough voters to the polls. I mean, how can you tell apart? How can you tell if the suppression of voters was the reason for lower turnout versus people simply not feeling inspired by the party?
I would say that the with respect to Wisconsin, we could probably I'm not sure, to be honest. I can't give you a thoroughly knowledgeable answer on that, especially when it comes to states like Wisconsin, where there's strong evidence that that is the case of voter suppression. However, in states like Michigan and Indiana, Pennsylvania, there is a lot of evidence that basically what happened is that people stayed home. And I think that what has to, for the party, what has to happen here is that they need to begin to view the fact that when people stay home, that is also making a choice. There is the two candidates, but no choice, none of the above. Staying home is definitely a choice that a voter makes. It's voting with their feet, so to speak. In this case, not getting on it.
So, Karen, a huge issue around the election, both before the election and even after the election, was the issue of working class voters, which you point out in your report is often sort of seen as synonymous with white working class voters, a group that both Republicans and Democrats seek to attract. But that, of course, leaves out working class voters of color. How important is it for the Democratic Party to understand that there's a huge difference? When you say working class voters, you have to include working class voters of color.
That is true. And I'm so glad that you brought that up, because one of the most interesting statistics I have found is the fact that the Economic Policy Institute has found that the working class will be majority people of color across the board from 18 to 64 in 2032. Now, if you include the category that is the millennial vote, and incidentally, we all know that during the primaries, the millennial vote went to Bernie, the Clinton and Trump numbers, it went to Bernie. And more interestingly, the Black millennial vote also went to Bernie. But what we have found in the Economic Policy Institute's analysis is that by 2021, that age from 17 to the late 20s will be majority people of color by 2021. And what that means is that the silo politics that the party has practiced up until that point of pitting identity politics against each other, or making the choice to prioritize one or over the other, simply will not work anymore. That playbook is now obsolete. So the concerns of the so-called working class is now intersecting with that of communities of color, because it is happening before our eyes. These two silo universes are intersecting, and the party needs to be able to address the working class as it really is composed, as it is beginning to be composed, because that is the future of the Democratic Party base.
How important a role do you think Clinton's inability to express economic justice issues was in the election? You point out in the autopsy that she, rather than backing free college tuition, she backed a program that was, a lot more complicated market-based solution, and people saw through that.
Well, yes, exactly. And again, the most important vote, which is the vote of the younger generations, and not entirely just millennials either. Let's be sure that there's plenty of other voters that have weighed in on when it comes to policy. Just recently, the Harvard-Harris poll also noted that the Democrats across the board want the party to go to the left, and they want them to adopt a more progressive economic agenda, such as free tuition, Medicare for all, a $15 minimum wage, and so on. And they are asking for the party to make a break with a status quo as it has been, and to actually issue the leadership that are still in the business of promoting it. So it's very important. And I think that did hurt Mrs. Clinton. And I think that if she was able to more, let's say, believably articulate her embrace of those kinds of changes, it could have turned out differently. Of course, her record suggests otherwise. And I can't tell you, I can't measure the amount of cynicism that the electorate has had over that, but we don't know. We will never know. Hmm. But certainly during, as far as her campaign messaging went, it wasn't there.
We talked a little bit about Black voters and the lack of outreach. What about Latino voters? What about Native American voters and Asians?
Well, to be sure, she enjoyed a significant amount of support from the Asian American electorate, not so much for the other communities of color, but
Latino voters, given what Trump had been saying about Mexicans being rapists and his rhetoric on drug trafficking and drug cartels and building a border wall, you would have imagined a huge swing towards Clinton from the Latino voter base, but that she didn't get as much as you would have expected.
Yeah, and I think at the end of this all, I think what we're talking about really is voter enthusiasm. That is a huge issue. It's what motivates people to turn out. And I think for the people on the lower socioeconomic spectrum, who have already had a very difficult life, who've already seen really how party politics may not be all that relevant to their lives, just didn't see that it would matter. And I think that's really a big factor. The party needs to consider that, and the party needs to be able to effectively communicate and demonstrate that their policies have relevance in the lives of the working class. Mm-hmm. And I just think that it wasn't there. And people saw that.
And so it's been a year just about since the election. Over this entire year, particularly given that we're gearing up for the midterm elections, we're already talking about candidates that the party can put up against Trump in the next presidential election. What has the party been doing? If they haven't conducted their own autopsy, the little that we know about internal wranglings within the party has been a shakeup of the Democratic National Committee just a few weeks ago or a few days ago. But really in the opposite direction to what you're just saying.
Well, I think, and I hate to say this because I am a member of the California Democratic Party. So if anyone ought to know any great programs that the party is engaged in right now in terms of outreach to the electorate and to the communities, it should be me. But I will tell you that I'm not aware of any really big program. And I have heard that there is resources and money being dedicated to such programs around the country. I am just not seeing evidence of it. And what's more, when we hear of these shakeups, that like the one that just occurred in Las Vegas very recently, it only deepens the cynicism that many of the activists, such as myself, have had and are trying to fight, quite frankly. Not just because we want to save the Democratic Party, but because we want to be able to have a real chance at enacting some more progressive agenda items. And of course, in a two-party system, that can only be the Democratic Party as a possibility.
And just to give our audience a sense of what happened recently at the Democratic National Committee, the chair, Tom Perez, who, narrowly won that position against Keith Ellison, a much more progressive Democrat, he stripped a number of longtime party officials of their at-large delegate status or their leadership positions. These are people associated with Keith Ellison and Bernie Sanders, and instead appointed a number of new folks that were closely linked to Hillary Clinton, as if last year's election wasn't indication enough.
Well, I think a lot of us looking at this are seeing that where the changes have been made are in those positions that will affect the rules for the next election cycle. And I think that's what's worrying, is that they are in the people that were purged or expunged, were those in those places that may have had a voice against a completely unified establishment view of things when it comes to the rules and procedures for the next elections. And so that's troublesome, along with the fact that some lobbyists, corporate lobbyists, were also apparently nominated and approved for the superdelegate positions. Those two things don't do anything to help the perception that many people have had now for quite some time about the party being an agent for change.
You, in the democraticautopsy.org website, where this entire report is available for the audience to look at, there's a quote from Clinton's new book, What Happened, which I haven't read the book, so I was surprised to see this quote, but I'm glad you picked it out. And I want to read it for our audience. Clinton writes, "Bernie proved again that it's important to set lofty goals that people can organize around and dream about, even if it takes generations to achieve them. Democrats should reevaluate a lot of our assumptions about which policies are politically viable. I criticized Bernie's free college for all plan as providing wasteful taxpayer-funded giveaways to rich kids, but it's precisely because they don't benefit everyone that targeted programs are so easily stigmatized and demagogued. The conclusion I reach from this is that Democrats should redouble our efforts to develop bold, creative ideas that offer broad-based benefits for the whole country." So I was really glad to see that Clinton actually came to this realization, but somehow even what her realization that she's published in her book is implying has not trickled down to the rest of her party.
No, and I think that one of the things that we can see in, and we're actually seeing this at many levels when it comes to electoral politics. When we look at what happened with the DNC purges, this is a move designed to appease and to serve the donor class. And if you look at a lot of the races now around the country, even down to the local level, but certainly even at the federal and state level, many of the candidates that are now coming up were themselves former wealthy donors and bundlers. And so I think the tension here is between serving, again, to bring back that Occupy kind of a description of things, of which Bernie repeated throughout his campaign, the 99% versus the 1%. And I believe that what happened at the DNC in Las Vegas was definitely in service to the donor class, just as I see that many of the so-called establishment or status quo politicians or candidates that are being put up against the progressives that are trying to run for office. Kind of a thread that you can see running between all of them is that they were either former wealthy donors or bundlers for wealthy donors.
Well, Karen, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. DemocraticAutopsy.org is the best website, right?
That's right. Thank you very much.
We'll post a link to that from our site later today. My guest has been Karen Bernal. She is the chair of the California Democratic Party's Progressive Caucus. Again, that website is democraticautopsy.org. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.